This first verse of this morning's reading from Isaiah gives me a bit of pause. It says in the NRSV, "Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our diseases, yet we accounted him stricken, struck down by God, and afflicted." That's worth listening very closely to, because what Isaiah is saying here has huge implications, and it's true in our world today just as it ever was. He's saying that we've missed something. In the immediate context, he's saying that something important has been misunderstood. There's a we here in this verse that has looked upon the woundedness of a suffering servant of God and has drawn the wrong conclusions, come to a mistaken interpretation, missed the core significance of what they have borne witness to. Because Isaiah, as he says here, he says, "We accounted him stricken, struck down by God and afflicted." In other words, powerless, passive, victimized, deservedly punished even. But what this "we" has missed, Isaiah tells us, is that it was our sickness and our pains that he was suffering for. And not just that, but Isaiah is keen to have us know that the subject of his reflections is not a passive kind of victim, but rather he bore, he carried, he willingly took on these afflictions with a purpose in mind. And oh, how he has been misunderstood. Whoever this "we" is that Isaiah has in mind, I dare say they find themselves in good company with a larger part of the human race. Because how many of us look around at the violence and the heartbreak of our world and have trouble seeing beyond the strickenness, the afflictedness? How many have said to themselves that if there is a God, surely he has left this place long, long ago? How many have held the suspicion in their hearts, even if they won't say it with their tongues, that sin and evil are stronger than goodness, more potent, more prevalent, that they seem to have won the battle? People of faith, people of other faiths and of no faiths have wrestled with these haunting possibilities. There was a story in the news back in 2007 that really grabbed my attention at the time. It was a story about one of a seemingly endless cycle of school shootings in our country. But this one was somewhat unique because it happened in an Amish school and in an Amish community in a place called Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania, if you remember. It was the guy who made the milk deliveries. His name was Charles Roberts, who showed up to this small one-room schoolhouse one day and shot 10 young girls, taking 5 of their lives before taking his own. But what happened in the following days and weeks was what was truly remarkable about these events. As a community, the Amish followed through on their principled commitment to radical forgiveness. And they forgave that man. They showed up to his funeral the very day after they buried their own children. and hugged this man's wife and this man's family. They supported that man's family with money for the next 15 years to this day. They even reached out to this murderer's parents and built that relationship over the following years so those parents knew that they were loved and welcome in that community. They helped them find their wholeness again after what was a tragic loss for them as well. In one of the many 10-year follow-up articles that were written around 2016, they were talking about this picture of Charles Roberts' mother had of her son hanging in her living room at one point. It shows him happy in that picture. And the word forgiven was written at the very top of the frame. And what she said in the accompanying interview was that she probably could not have done that. She couldn't have believed that if that community hadn't made it true. The article also talked about all of the lingering hurt and trauma and feelings of loss, all of the therapy and counseling that's happened in that Amish community over the years. Yes, the pain was no less real. But to anyone who might look on that community and say just stricken, struck down by God, afflicted, Isaiah's voice is still objecting. We have missed something. We have missed the most important thing. Over these past few weeks, we've been listening out together in these weekly readings from Isaiah and from the passion narratives in the Gospels and from the New Testament epistles about what it means that the suffering servant suffered, and in particular, what it is that the cross might mean. By now, we've listened carefully to the full sweep of the gospel story leading up to the crucifixion in a couple of different versions. We've heard Mark, we've heard Matthew, and today we're brought into this one very brief moment in time in Luke's gospel where Jesus is up on the cross with these two criminals. And what we hear him say is just this one short whispered prayer, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." If you had been in the onlooking crowd that day and all you saw was a victim up there on that cross, passive, stricken, powerless, afflicted, then you would have missed something. The main thing, even. Because these words tell us that Jesus was doing something up on that cross. They tell us about his heart and about his work up on that cross. If you're standing too far away from it, maybe you can't hear that that work is going on, but if you had been close enough to hear, what you'd find is that Christ is taking the very moment of his deepest suffering and pain and turning it into something else entirely. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. If we dig beneath the surface of that short prayer, we can observe together a number of things that are remarkable, remarkable for someone who is currently hanging on a cross. It's incredible that forgiveness is even on his mind in this moment of pain. It is incredible that he would pray a prayer of intercession on a cross for the very people who put him there and who are mocking him while he's there, that he would pray forgiveness for his enemies at the height of their violence. It's incredible that he still sees them with a depth of understanding and compassion to be able to pray for them. They don't understand what they're doing. It's incredible if you think about it. It is incredible that he does not demonize them, but rather appreciates their sin and brokenness and the far-reaching reverberations of it all as part of the tragedy of their condition. It is incredible that Jesus is able to come before God with a bigger picture on his heart and mind than just the immediacy of his situation. And if we don't see that work, we miss something. We miss the whole thing, in fact. One of the greatest paradoxes here on the cross is that while it appears from a distance that the main thing that's happening is the pain afflicted on this man, in fact, the main thing that's happening is the work that he is doing for us. Indeed, for the world. When you look again today on that two-sided cross, one of those sides seems to shout out loudly powerlessness, afflictedness, victimization, passive suffering, while the other side shouts out even louder the power of God to remake the world through forgiveness. Amen. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Paul says it powerfully in the reading from Colossians today. He writes, "When you were dead in trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, God made you alive together with him when he forgave us all of our trespasses. Erasing the record that stood against us with its legal demands, he set this aside, nailing it to the cross." Who has the power here? Who is dead here and who is really alive here? What is getting nailed on the cross here and who is doing the nailing here? What Paul says out loud is what Jesus only whispers in a prayer and what Isaiah says that we've all missed. Do you not realize that the cross is the place that has flipped the whole world on its head? We can walk free and forgiven there because he forgave there. We can put our trust and faith there with all of the broken things that we do, those things that we do with positive malice in our hearts, as well as those things we do in ignorance, and entrust them into the hands of the one who said, "Forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing." Up there on the cross, it looks as though Jesus is nailed up there. But because of what he does up there, somehow what afflicts all of us to do such a thing has been nailed up there. The cross is a place of mystery, you see. How can it be that the sight of such great pain and anguish could have become the sight of our redemption and reconciliation? How can the cross hold both of those sides together? And how can I wear it or look on it or worship with it and see the full truth of its hurtful side without letting it lead me to the other side as well? How can I look at that cross with guilt and hatred and evil in my heart and then stop short of receiving the forgiveness that gives way to freedom and restoration? How can we stop short here this morning among ourselves and see in the cross an image of the people and the things in our lives that have handed crosses to us. We know that bitterness and that pain and that unforgiveness and that anger that swells up with those crosses. And we're not naive that those feelings are every bit what this thing really is. But knowing and believing what has happened there, what Christ has done there, the work that was done there, how can any of us look on and worship with that cross and not also understand that the hurt and the outrage must then lead to forgiveness? Even of the ones who don't know what they're doing. Because on the cross, Jesus brought his persecutors before the throne of God's forgiveness. And the crosses that we hold and that we wear and worship with call us to do the same. The prayer that Jesus prays is, "Forgive them." In Paul's words, he has nailed their sins on the cross. The cross isn't just a place for you and me to go and find relief from our guilt and forgiveness for our sins. The cross is what holds our feet to the fire of forgiveness as well. The cross is what compelled those Amish folks in Nickel Mines to forgive and to pave the way for that broken town to find life and healing again. The cross is a powerful call to you to lay down a few things. Why hold on to the hurt? Why hold on to the grudges that are just making you dead on the inside? Why be part of perpetuating the cycle that just goes on and on and on and repeats itself over and over and over again in our world? And why do that as a follower of Jesus, of all people? Don't you know how deeply problematic that is because of what the cross means and what Christ has done there? Laying it down and taking up the cross of forgiveness doesn't mean that the bruises won't hurt. It doesn't mean that you won't need time to get back on your feet again after some of the harder blows. Jesus still had scars on his hands and feet after the resurrection. It doesn't mean that forgiveness is such an easy thing or that it's once done and over. But it is a healing thing. It is a place where new life begins. It is a practice that seals up some of the gaping holes in our world. It is freeing and a site where relationships get formed and get deepened. It is the core practice of a brand new world, a resurrected world. And like it or not, it is the only way to turn the brokenness of the world upside down. And that's why Christ tells us the only way to be my disciple is to take up a cross. What are you holding on to today? What is killing your soul today? Who are those people that are living in your head this morning and aren't even paying rent? Are you going to bring them to the cross today and allow a whole new world to begin?